Hold your horse, sir, ma'am. Now. By midday, Victor had earned tuppence. It wasn't that people didn't have horses that needed holding, it was just that they didn't seem to want him to hold them. Eventually, a gnarled little man from further along the street sidled up to him, dragging four horses. Victor had been watching him for hours, in frank astonishment that anyone would give the wizened homunculus a kindly smile, let alone a horse. But he'd been doing a brisk trade, while Victor's broad shoulders, handsome profile, and honest open smile were definitely a drawback in the horse-holding business.
"You're new to this, right?" said the little man.
"Yes," said Victor.
"Huh, I could tell. Waiting for your big break in the clicks, right?"
He grinned encouragingly.
"No, I've had my big break, in fact," said Victor.
"Why are you here, then?"
Victor shrugged.
"I broke it."
"Huh, is that so? Yes, sir. Thank you, sir. God bless you, sir. Right you are, sir,"
said the man, accepting another set of reins.
"I suppose you don't need an assistant," said Victor wistfully.
Bezam Planter stared at the pile of coins in front of him. Throat Dibbler moved his hands, and it was a smaller pile of coins, but it was still a bigger pile of coins than Bezam had ever seen while in a waking state.
"And we're still showing it every quarter of an hour," breathed Bezam. "I've had to hire a boy to turn the handle. I don't know what should I do with all this money."
Throat patted him on the shoulder.
"Buy bigger premises," he said.
"I've been thinking about that," said Bezam. "Something with fancy pillars out in front. And my daughter Calliope plays the organ really nice. It'd make a good accompaniment. And there should be lots of gold paint and curly bits."
His eyes glazed. It had found another mind.
Holywood dreams. "And make it a palace like the fabulous Roxy in Clatch, or the richest temple there ever was, with slave girls to sell the banged grains and peanuts, and Bezam Planter walking about proprietorially in a red velvet jacket with gold string on it."
"Hm?" he whispered, as the sweat beaded on his forehead.
"I said I'm off," said Throat. "Got to keep moving in the moving picture business, you know."
"Mrs. Planter says you've got to make more pictures with that young man," said Bezam. "The whole city's talking about him. She said several ladies swooned when he gave them that smouldery look. She watched it 5 times, he added, his voice rhymed with sudden suspicion. "And that girl, well..."
"Don't you worry about a thing," said Throat loftily. "I've got them under control."
Sudden doubt drifted across his face.
"See you,"
he said shortly, and scurried out of the building. Bezam stood alone and looked around at the cobwebbed interior of the Odeum, his overheated imagination peopling its dark corners with potted palms, gold leaf, and fat cherubs. Peanut shells and banged grain bags crunched under his feet. "Have to get it cleaned up for the next house," he thought. "I expect that monkey'll be first in the queue again." Then his eye fell on the poster for Sword of Passion. Amazing, really. There hadn't been much in the way of elephants and volcanoes, and the monsters had been trolls with bits stuck on them. But in that close-up, well, all the men had sighed, and then all the women had sighed. It was like magic. He grinned at the images of Victor and Ginger. "Wonder what those two are doing now," he thought. "Probably eating caviar off gold plates and lounging around up to their knees in velvet cushions, you bet."
"You look up to your knees in it, lad," said the horse-holder.
"I'm afraid I'm not getting the hang of this horse-holding," said Victor.
"Ah, 'tis a hard trade, horse-holding," said the man. "It's learning the proper grovelling and the irreverent but not too impudent cheery horse-holder's banter. People don't just want you to look after the horse, see? They want a horse-holding experience."
"They do?"
"They want an amusing encounter and a soupçon of repartee,"
said the little man.
"It's not just a matter of holding reins."
Realization began to dawn on Victor.
"It's a performance," he said.
The horse-holder tapped the side of his strawberry-shaped nose.
"That's right," he said.
Torches flared in Holywood. Victor struggled through the crowds in the main street. Every bar, every tavern, every shop had its doors thrown open. A sea of people ebbed and flowed between them. Victor tried jumping up and down to search the mob of faces. He was lonely and lost and hungry. He needed someone to talk to, and she wasn't here.
Victor!
He spun around. Rock bore down on him like an avalanche.
Victor, my friend!
A fist the size and hardness of a foundation stone pounded him playfully on the shoulder.
Oh, hi, said Victor weakly. How's it going, Rock?
Great, great. Tomorrow we shoot Bad Menace of Trawl Valley.
No, I'm very happy for you, said Victor.
You're my lucky human, Rock boomed. Rock, what a name. Come and have a drink.
Victor accepted. He really didn't have much of a choice, because Rock gripped his arm, and ploughing through the crowds like an icebreaker, half-led, half-dragged him towards the nearest door. A blue light illuminated a sign. Most Morporkians could read Troll. It was hardly a difficult language. The sharp runes spelled out, The Blue Lears. It was a troll bar. The smoky glow from the furnaces behind the slab counter was the only light. It illuminated three trolls playing, well, something percussive, but Victor couldn't quite make out what, because the decibel level was in realms where the sound was a solid force, and it made his eyeballs vibrate. The furnace smoke hid the ceiling.
"What you having?"
roared Rock.
"I don't have to drink molten metal, do I?"
Victor quavered. He had to quaver at the top of his voice in order to be heard.
"We got all type of human drink!"
shouted the female troll behind the bar. It had to be a female. There was no doubt about it. She looked slightly like the statues cavemen used to carve of fertility goddesses thousands of years ago, but mostly like a foothill.
"We're very cosmopolitan."
"I'll have a beer, then."
"And a flowers of sulphur on the rocks, Ruby,"
added Rock. Victor took the opportunity to look around the bar, now that he was getting accustomed to the gloom and his eardrums had mercifully gone numb. He was aware of masses of trolls seated at long tables, with here and there a dwarf, which was astonishing. Dwarfs and trolls normally fought like, well, dwarfs and trolls. In their native mountains there was a state of unremitting vendetta. Holywood certainly changed things.
"Can I have a quiet word?"
Victor shouted in Rock's pointed ear.
"Sure!"
Rock put down his drink. It contained a purple paper umbrella, which was charring in the heat.
"Have you seen Ginger? You know, Ginger? She's working at Borgel's. Only in the mornings. I've just been there. Where does she go when she's not working?" "Who know where anyone go?"
There was a sudden silence from the combo in the smoke. One of the trolls picked up a small rock and started to pound it gently, producing a slow, sticky rhythm that clung to the walls like smoke. And from the smoke, Ruby emerged like a galleon out of the fog, with a ridiculous feather boa around her neck. It was continental drift, with curves. She began to sing. The trolls stood in respectful silence. After a while, Victor heard a sob. Tears were rolling down Rock's face. "What's the song about?" he whispered. Rock leaned down.
"It's ancient folkloric troll song," he said. "It's about Amber and Jasper. They were..."
He hesitated and waved his hands about vaguely.
"Friends. Good friends." "I think I know what you mean," said Victor. "And one day, Amber takes her troll's dinner down to the cave and finds him."
Rock waved his hands in vague yet thoroughly descriptive motions.
"With another lady troll. So she go home and get her club, and come back and beat him to death. Thump, thump, thump. 'Cause he was her troll, and he had done her wrong. It's a very romantic song."
Victor stared. Ruby undulated down from the tiny stage and glided among the customers, a small mountain in a four-wheel skid. She must weigh 2 tons, he thought. If she sits on my knee, they'll have to roll me off the floor like a carpet. "What did she just say to that troll?" he said, as a deep wave of laughter rolled across the room. Rock scratched his nose.
"It's a play on words," he said. "Very hard to translate, but basically she say, 'Is that...
The legendary sceptre of Magma, who was king of the mountain, smiter of thousands, yea, even tens of thousands, ruler of the Golden River, master of the bridges, delver in dark places, crusher of many enemies?
He took a deep breath.
In your pocket? Or are you just glad to see me?
Victor's forehead creased. I don't get it, he said.
Perhaps are not translated properly, said Rock.
He took a pull of molten sulphur.
I hear untied alchemists is casting for...
Rock, there's something very odd about this place, said Victor urgently. Can't you feel it?
What odd?
Everything seems to, well, fizz. No one acts like they should. Did you know that there was a great city here once? Where the sea is? A great city? And it's just gone?
Rock rubbed his nose thoughtfully. It looked like a Neanderthal man's first attempt at an axe.
And there's the way everyone acts, said Victor, as if who they are and what they want are the most important things in the world.
I'm wondering, Rock began.
Yes, said Victor.
I'm wondering, would it be worth taking half an inch off my nose? My cousin Breccia knows this stonemason, fixed his ears a treat. What do you think?
Victor stared dully at him.
I mean, on the one hand, it's too big. But on the other hand, it's definitely your stereotyped troll nose, right? I mean, maybe I'll look better. But in this business, maybe it's best to look just as troll as you can. Like Morris had his touched up with cement. Now he got a face you wouldn't want to meet on a dark night. Hey, what do you think? I value your opinion, because you're a human with ideas.
He gave Victor a bright silicon smile. Eventually Victor said,
It's a great nose, Rock. With you behind it, it could go a long way.
Rock gave a big grin and took another pull of sulphur. He extracted a small steel swizzle stick and sucked the amethyst off it.
You really think, he began, and was then aware of the small area of empty space.
Victor had gone.
I don't know nothing about no one, said the horseholder,
looking shiftily at the looming presence of detritus. Dibbler chewed on his cigar. It had been a bumpy journey from Ankh, even in his new coach, and he'd missed lunch.
Tall lad, bit dopey. Thin moustache, he said. He was working for you, right?
The horseholder gave in.
He'll never make a good horseholder anyway, he said. Let's his work get on top of him. I think he went to get something to eat.
Victor sat in the dark alley, his back pressed against the wall, and tried to think. He remembered staying out in the sun too long once when he was a boy. The feeling he'd got afterwards was something like this. There was a soft flopping noise in the packed sand by his feet. Someone had dropped a hat in front of him. He stared at it. Then someone started playing the harmonica. They weren't very good at it. Most of the notes were wrong, and those that were right were cracked. There was a tune in there somewhere in the same way that there's a bit of beef in a hamburger grinder. Victor sighed and fumbled in his pocket for a couple of pennies. He tossed them into the hat.
Yeah, yeah, he said. Very good. Now go away.
He was aware of a strange smell. It was hard to place, but could perhaps have been a very old and slightly damp nursery rug. He looked up.
Woof, bloody woof, said Gaspode the Wonder Dog.
Borgel's commissary had decided to experiment with salads tonight. The nearest salad-growing district was 30 slow miles away.
What's this?
Demanded a troll, holding up something limp and brown. Frontkin, the short-order chef, hazarded a guess.
Celery, he said.
He peered closer.
Yeah, celery. It's brown.
It's right. Ripe celery ought to be brown, said Frontkin quickly. Shows it's ripe, he added.
It should be green.
Nah, you're thinking about the tomatoes, said Frontkin.
Yeah, and what's this runny stuff? Said a man in the queue.
Frontkin drew himself up to his full height.
That, he said, is the mayonnaise. Made it to myself. Out of a book, he added proudly. Yeah, I expect you did, said the man, prodding it.
Clearly oil, eggs and vinegar were not involved, right? Spécialité de la maison, said Frontkin.
Right, right, said the man, only it's attacking my lettuce.
Frontkin grasped his ladle angrily.
Look, he began.
No, it's all right, said the prospective diner. The slugs have formed a defensive ring.
There was a commotion by the door. Detritus the troll waded through the diners, with cut-me-own-throat Dibbler strutting along behind him. The troll shouldered the queue aside and glared at Frontkin.
Mr. Dibbler want a word,
he said, and reached across the counter, lifted the dwarf up by his food-encrusted shirt, and dangled him in front of Throat.
Anyone seen Victor Tugelbend, said Throat, or that girl Ginger?
Frontkin opened his mouth to swear, and thought better of it.
The boy was in here half an hour ago, he squeaked. Ginger works here mornings. Don't know where she goes. Where'd Victor go? Said Throat.
He pulled a bag out of his pocket. It jingled. Frontkin's eyes swiveled towards it as though they were ball bearings, and it was a powerful magnet.
Dunno, Mr. Throat, he said. He just went out again when she wasn't there. Right, said Throat. Well, if you see him again, tell him I'm looking for him, and I'm going to make him a star. Right? Star. Right, said the dwarf.
Throat reached into his money bag and produced a $10 piece.
And I want to order dinner for later on, he added.
Dinner, right,
quavered Frontkin.
Steak and prawns, I think, said Throat. With a choice of sun-kissed vegetables in season, and then... strawberries and cream.
Frontkin stared at him.
He began.
Detritus poked the dwarf so that he swung backwards and forwards.
And I, he said, will have a well-weathered basalt with aggregate of fresh-hewn sandstone conglomerates. Right? Yes, said Frontkin.
Put him down, Detritus. He doesn't want to be hanging around, said Throat. And gently.
He looked around at the fascinated faces.
Remember, he said, I'm looking for Victor Tugelbend, and I'm going to make him a star. If anyone sees him, you must tell him. Oh, and I'll have the steak rare, Frontkin.
He strode back to the door. After he had gone, the chattering flowed back like a tide.
Make him a star? What do you want a star for?
I didn't know you could make stars. I thought they were like, you know, stuck to the sky.
I think he meant to make him a star. You know, him himself, turn him into a star.
How can you make anyone into a star?
I dunno. I suppose you compress them right up small and then they burst into this mass of flaming hydrogen.
Good grief.
Yeah. Is that troll mean or what?
Victor looked at the dog carefully. It couldn't have spoken to him. It must have been his imagination. But he'd said that last time, hadn't he?
I wonder what your name is, said Victor, patting it on the head.
Gaspard, said Gaspard.
Victor's hand froze in mid-tousle.
Tuppence, said the dog wearily. World's only bloody harmonica-playing dog. Tuppence.
It is the sun, Victor thought. I haven't been wearing a hat. In a minute I'll wake up and there'll be cool sheets.
Well, you didn't play very well. Well, I couldn't recognise the tune, he said, stretching his mouth into a terrible grin.
You're not supposed to recognise the bloody tune, said Gaspard, sitting down heavily and industriously scratching one ear with his hind leg. I'm a dog. You're supposed to be bloody amazed I can bloody well get a squeak out of the bloody thing.
How shall I put it? Victor thought. Do I just say, excuse me, you appear to be talking? No, probably not.
He said.
Hey, you're quite chatty for a... No.
Fleas, said Gaspard, changing ears and legs. Giving me jip.
Oh dear.
And all these trolls. Can't stand them. They smell all wrong. Bloody walking stones. You try and bite him, next minute you're spitting teeth. It's not natural.
Talking of natural, I can't help noticing that you...
Bloody desert, this place, said Gaspard.
You are a talking dog.
"I expect you're wondering," said Gaspard, turning his penetrating stare on Victor once again, "how come I'm talking?"
"Hadn't given it a thought," said Victor.
"Me neither," said Gaspard, "until a couple of weeks ago. All my life, never said a bloody word. Worked for a bloke back in the big city. Tricks and that. Balancing a ball on me nose. Walking on me hind legs. Jumping through a hoop. Carried the hat round in me mouth afterwards. You know, show business. Then this woman pats me on the head. Says, 'Ew, what a dear little doggy. He looks like he understands every word we say.' And I thinks, 'Oh, well, I don't even bother to make the effort any more, missus.' And then I realises I can hear the words, and they're coming out me mouth. So I grabbed the hat and had it away on me paws pretty damn quick, while I was still staring."
"Why?" said Victor.
"Exactly what life do you think a genuine talking dog is going to have?" he said. "Shouldn't have opened my stupid mouth."
"But you're talking to me," said Victor.
Gaspard gave him a sly look. "Yeah, but just you try telling anyone," he said. "Anyway, you're all right, you've got the look. I could tell it a mile off."
"What on earth do you mean?" said Victor.
"You don't think you really belong to yourself, right?" said the dog. "You've had the feeling that something else is doing your thinking for you."
"Good grief."
"Give you a kind of hunted look," said Gaspard. He picked up the cap in his mouth. "Tuppence," he said indistinctly. "I mean, it's not as if I've got any way of spending it, but tuppence." He gave a canine shrug.
"What do you mean by a hunted look?" said Victor.
"You've all got the look. Many are called and few are chosen style of thing."
"What look?"
"Like you've been called here and you don't know why."
Gaspard tried to scratch his ear again.
"Saw you acting Conan the Barbarian," he said.
What do you think of it?" said Victor.
"I reckon so long as old Cohen never gets to hear about it, you should be okay." "I said, how long ago was he in here?" shouted Dibbler.
On the tiny stage, Ruby was crooning something in a voice like a ship in thick fog and bad trouble.
"Grow, grow."
Subtitle, "Once Again I Am Falling in Love." Literally, experiencing the pleasant feeling of being hit over the head with a rock by Chondrodite, the troll god of love. Note, Chondrodite must not be confused with Gigalith, the troll god who gives trolls wisdom by hitting them on the head with a rock, or Silicarus, the troll god who brings trolls good fortune by hitting them on the head with a rock, or with the folk hero Monolith, who first wrested the secret of rocks from the gods.
"He only just went out," bellowed Rock. "I'm trying to listen to the song, all right?"
"Oh, we're..."
Subtitle, "Why is it now I am a blue colour?" Cut Me Own Throat nudged Detritus, who was taking the weight off his knuckles and watching the floor show with his mouth open. The old troll's life had up to now been very straightforward. People paid you money, and you hit other people. Now it was beginning to get complicated. Ruby had winked at him. Strange and unfamiliar emotions were rampaging through Detritus's battered heart. Subtitle, "What is the action I should take at this time?"
"Come on," snapped Throat.
Detritus lumbered to his feet and took one last longing look at the stage. Subtitle, "I Can't Help It, Hire Big Boy." Ruby blew him a kiss. Detritus blushed the colour of fresh-cut garnet. Gaspard led the way out of the alley and through the dark hinterland of scrubby bushes and sandgrass behind the town.
"There's definitely something wrong with this place," he muttered.
"It's different," said Victor. "What do you mean, wrong?"
Gaspard looked as though he was going to spit.
"Now, take me," he said, ignoring the interruption. "A dog. Never dreamed in me life except about chasing things. And sex, of course. Suddenly, I'm dreaming these dreams. In colour. Frighten the bloody life out of me. Never seen colour before, right? Dogs see in black and white, as I expect you know, as you being a great reader. Red comes as a nasty shock, I can tell you. You think your dinner is just this white bone with shades of grey on it. Suddenly it turns out for years you've been eating this ghastly red and purple stuff.
What kind of dreams? Said Victor.
It's bloody embarrassing, said Gaspode. Like in one there's this bridge that's been washed away, and I have to run and bark a warning, right? And there's another where this house is on fire, and I drag these kids out. And there's one where some kids are lost in these caves, and I find them, and I go and lead the search party to them. And I hate kids. Seems I can't get me head down these days without rescuing people, or saving people, or foiling robbers or something. I mean, I'm 7 years old. I got hard pad, I got scurf, I got fleas, something dreadful, and I don't need to be a hero every time I go to sleep.
Gosh, isn't life interesting, said Victor, when you see it from someone else's perspective?
Gaspode rolled a crusted yellow eye skyward.
Where are we going? Said Victor.
We're going to see a few Hollywood folk, said Gaspode, because there's something weird going on.
Up on the hill? I didn't know there were any people on the hill.
They ain't people, said Gaspode.
A little twig fire burned on the slope of Holywood Hill. Victor had lit it because, well, it was reassuring, because it was the sort of thing humans did. He found it necessary to remember he was human, and probably not crazy. It wasn't that he'd been talking to a dog. People often talked to dogs. The same applied to the cat, and maybe even the rabbit. It was the conversation with the mouse and the duck that might be considered odd.
"You think we wanted to talk?" snapped the rabbit. "One minute I'm just another rabbit and happy about it, and next minute, who's Anne? I'm thinking. That's a major drawback if you're looking for happiness as a rabbit. Let me tell you. You want grass and sex, not thoughts like, what's it all about when you get right down to it?"
"Yeah, but at least you eat grass." Gaspode pointed out. At least grass don't talk back at you.
You think you've got problems, said the cat, apparently reading his mind. I'm reduced to eating fish. You put a paw on your dinner, it shouts, help. You've got a major predicament.
There was a silence. They looked at Victor. So did the mouse. And the duck. The duck was looking particularly belligerent. It had probably heard about the orange sauce.
Yeah. Take us, said the mouse. There's me being chased by this.
It indicated the cat looming over it.
Around the kitchen. Scrabble, scrabble, squeak, panic. Then there's this sizzling noise in my head. I see a frying pan. You understand? A second ago I never knew what frying was. Now I'm holding the handle. He comes round the corner. Clang! Now he's staggering around saying what hit me. I say, me. That's when we both realise. We're talking.
Conceptualising, said the cat.
It was a black cat with white paws, ears like shotgun targets, and the scarred face of a cat that has already lived 8 lives to the full.
Yeah, you tell him, kid, said the mouse.
Tell him what you did next, said Gaspode.
We came here, said the cat.
From Ankh-Morpork, said Victor.
Yeah.
That's nearly 30 miles.
Yeah, take it from me, said the cat. It's hard to hitchhike when you're a cat.
See, said Gaspode, it's happening all the time. All sorts are turning up in Hollywood. They don't know why they've come, only that it's important to be here. And they don't act like they do anywhere else in the world. I've been watching. Something weird's going on.
The duck quacked. There were words in there somewhere, but so mangled by the incompatibility of beak and larynx that Victor couldn't understand a word. The animals gave it a sympathetic audience.
What's up, duck? Said the rabbit.
The duck says, translated Gaspode, that it's like a migratory thing. Just the same feeling as a migration, he says.
Yeah? I didn't have far to come, the rabbit volunteered. We lived on the dunes anyway, it sighed. For 3 happy years and 4 miserable days, it added.
A thought struck Victor.
So you'd know about the old man on the beach, he said.
Oh, him, yeah, him. He was always coming up here.
What sort of person was he? Said Victor.
Listen, Buster, up to 4 days ago I had a vocabulary consisting of 2 verbs and 1 noun. What do you think I thought he was? All I know is he didn't bother us. We probably thought he was a rock on legs or something.
Victor thought about the book in his pocket, chanting and lighting fires. What sort of person did that?
I don't know what's going on, he said. I'd like to find out. Look, haven't you got names? I feel awkward talking to people without names.
Only me, said Gaspard. Being a dog, I'm named after the famous Gaspard, you know.